And I said, will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Not pod, just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. And if you don't
Thanks.
Want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay. Thanks.
Rude.
It was actually my very first week working at the bank. And, The other bitch on the show, Samantha, was on vacation. This specific branch was different from what you normally think of when you think of like bank branches. It was a downtown Birmingham location, and the branch itself was like on the ground floor level of the largest tower that is in downtown Birmingham at that time. The drive-through wasn't attached to it. It was actually on the opposite block from the bank itself, from the tower. It was just like a standalone building. And it was about the size of a small apartment with a kitchen area, a bathroom. There was an open area where the tills were. And it had a giant window that overlooked the drive-throughs. There was also a server room that Jason and I named the fart room. Pretty sure Samantha took down our plaque we had made for it. Since it was the first week, I had spent 2 days inside of the tower in the main branch. And this specific day, it was Wednesday, April 27th, 2011. I was training in the drive-thru. In Alabama, it's pretty common to have tornadoes on an almost daily basis in the spring. You almost become like desensitized to them after a while. That day was much of the same. It was slightly different because we had been hearing for days, you know, all of these warnings and things like that. But, you know, you just go about your day when you're kind of used to it. We had heard of tornadoes popping up around Alabama and the surrounding state earlier in the day. And obviously the previous 2 days to that. But they weren't close to where I was, so I didn't really think about it. Also, I was 20 at the time, so I didn't think about anything that was important, honestly. You just become used to it, you know? And as the afternoon rolled around, we began to hear of more outbreaks, and they were closer, a lot closer. We kind of waited around to hear if we were going to close up shop early. And at some point that afternoon, we were told to pack it in, like, get it together as quickly as you can and get out of here. But as we were like closing everything up, because it's not an easy thing to do. You got to count a bunch of stuff. You got to lock it all up. You got to count other stuff, all this other things. And in the middle of that, we got another call and they said, hey, close up shop, but do not leave this building. And it was like at that point, you know, oh shit, what? you should have, like, I remember back then I was so mad. I was like, you should have done this hours ago. You knew what was happening. You should have done this hours ago. And they just didn't. And so we're sitting there in a building that is, again, tiny. Half of the front of it is just made out of glass. And we're like, okay. And at this point, things had like become eerie outside. It got really dark, really fast. And obviously we can see everything. There's a giant fucking window. And it was just still, it was eerie. It was quiet. There was no traffic. There was nothing. That's normal before a tornado hits. If you go out, if you're used to tornadoes, you know what I'm talking about. But if you go outside right before one hits, it's the eeriest thing ever, because you know that something is right around the corner, something that is powerful and strong, and the noise is going to be really loud and the wind's going to be really loud. But right before it hits, there's nothing. There's no wind. All of the birds are quiet. All of the animals are quiet. Everything's still. And that's what it was like. And there were no cars at this point, because everybody had been told, you need to shelter in place right now. There was a point where they did tell us, hey, you can leave. But at that time, we had heard about the Tuscaloosa tornado, and we had heard it was heading right for us. And so it was at a time where it was rush hour, and the stretch of highway interstate that goes between Birmingham and where I was going, it very, very congested. It can sometimes take, back then, it could take like 2 hours because of construction. And so it wasn't worth a risk of like getting in a car, getting on the interstate, and then just being trapped with other cars on the interstate, because we didn't know what it was going to be like. So we stayed. And we stayed in that area, or we stayed in that little building where we could just see everything. And when we first spotted it, we didn't even realize that it was a tornado. Since we were at ground level, it was hard to see past the other towers, because there's the block that we're on, there's like three towers that surround it. So it's hard to see kind of through it. But we did eventually realize that's like what we were seeing. And the reason we initially didn't realize it was a tornado was because it was just so large. We thought it was just like clouds getting denser as it got closer. But the reality was it was just that big of a tornado. Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales.
And today, if you haven't guessed by now, I'm going to tell you about the 2011 tornado super outbreak. But before we get started, Samantha, what are we drinking?
I'm so glad you asked. We are drinking the Twister cocktail, at least sort of, as per usual. First, though, I got to give you the recipe, and I'm going to read it verbatim because it's interesting. So you're going to do 2 measures vodka, 1 little lemonade, 1 cup of ice, 1 part lime, and 1 juice of lime juice. So basically, it's kind of up for grabs, but those are the ingredients.
Well, just like a tornado. Chaotic energy.
It does, actually. It's just all over the place. I probably followed it the closest, but I essentially did lemonade, lime juice, and did a little bit of extra lime juice just because I didn't have an actual lime. And then no vodka and did Sprite Zero instead on top. And it's quite tasty. Highly recommend. So there's your mocktail, some Sprite, lemonade, lime juice. And ladies, how did you not follow directions?
I didn't want to use the vodka that I had because it was like orange flavor or chocolate flavor or vanilla flavor. So I just didn't have like regular vodka. I don't know. Also, I just didn't want to drink heavy. So I got a lime, I think it's lime Truly, and I mix lemon juice into it. And then I put, well, not lemon juice, but the pink lemonade Crystal Light thing in it. So
close enough.
There you go. Close enough.
And I didn't follow directions at all. I only had orange vodka. And so I was like, I'll use orange vodka. Didn't have lemonade, didn't have lime. So I did orange vodka and spray and a little bit of grenadine to make it pink. So it's good.
It's very pretty.
I mean, mine tastes good.
I like the chaotic energy we're bringing to an episode about tornadoes. I really do.
I do too. What a wild experience that was. And I think you were at the beach. Were you not?
No, I was not. You think I could afford to go to the beach at the time? No, I was vacationing at home. And I remember that because if I'm not mistaken, and my sister can correct me on this, but I think she had to go to the branch to cover while I was out. So she was there.
Oh, I didn't. When it happened,
I'm pretty sure. Because we had some pretty gnarly weather where I was. We had trees down because I lived out in the boonies. But the good thing about that is most of your neighbors have tractors. So within, you know, a few hours, they had cleared the roads. But there were trees down everywhere where I was. And I was like, yeah. First, I miss when Montana starts the job her very first week. And then I miss when tornadoes come through and she's working there.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Good timing.
It was terrifying. And I mean, you remember the manager that we had. He was not on top of things. So I remember being very mad that they could have shut it down earlier and allowed us to like get safely home. Because most of us were going south. That's just kind of how it works in Alabama.
He could have, I mean, I guess technically he could have made like the executive choice and closed it down, but his managers were not telling him that it was okay to close the branch down. And when you work for retail banking, you do have very specific rules because per regulations, there has to be extremely good reason to close a branch and not give a client the ability to get their money. Tornado outbreak seems like a pretty good reason, but I do distinctly remember that after this incident, dude, they were letting people go 2 hours before a tornado warning was even sounded because they were not going to risk it again. They learned their lesson. Thankfully, nobody lost their lives. And I think this one was the one that actually took out the CenterPoint branch.
Mm-hmm. It did.
And we ended up having to clear out the safe deposit boxes.
That was the one where afterwards it was just police standing around, like the building was gone and it was just the safes left standing.
Yeah, like all of the teller windows were gone and their coin vaults were just sitting there. And it was really crazy. And we ended up getting some of the safe deposit boxes and had to inventory them and put them up. And it was a mess. But like I said, I mean, they learned their lesson. Again, thankfully, nobody lost their lives as far as in a branch. But we lost the whole branch. So they decided going forward, they would be a little bit more cautious in these situations and maybe close down a little early. I remember one time right after this, it was like maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, we had this dude that was a jerk banging on our doors because we closed an hour early because there were literally tornado sirens going off in downtown. This was less than a month, I think, after the one that you're going to talk about. And he was pissed because he needed money. And I'm like, there's an ATM over there. Well, I need $1,000. Well, where are you going to go right now to spend $1,000 that's going to let you in the building? You'll be fine.
It was always like that there. It was so chaotic. There is so much. I've barely missed being peed on and had coffee thrown on me multiple times when I worked there. Yeah, it was a wild time. But
the times we would go out after work and we would be telling stories and all of the tables around us had stopped talking and were listening to our stories at our table. And they're like, we got to know what branch you work at because I got to visit this place one time.
It was crazy. But I will say, and I want to clarify, I know I gave my firsthand account and I didn't go into details because honestly, it was kind of anticlimactic after that. Like, it's terrifying to see something like that. But where the tornado was at, yes, we got high winds and things like that, but it did not go directly over me. I could see it on the north side of where I was at. And I just watched it move across the north side of the city. So, yeah, I mean, that was all of like 15 minutes and then it was gone. It was, it was over in Fultondale and I could go home at that point, and that's kind of like the reality of tornadoes is they don't last that long. Typically, sometimes they'll hover, but they don't hover for long. They're through there and the destruction that they cause and they create is devastating. And we're going to get into it. But before I do get into that, I do want to give you like a little bit of information on tornadoes in general and like the area that we live in as far as that you now live in, Samantha, as far as like tornadoes go.
Speaking of, encroaching on territories,
Yeah, and I'm encroaching on territories, but whatever. I got IMAX seats to one of the deadliest tornadoes in history. So to kick it off, I wanted to cover some stuff first. I did do like a lot of research and like my specialty is like looking at data and being able to like see, like that's literally my job is looking at data and like analyzing it and all that other nonsense. And there's a lot of data when it comes to anything that has to do with the weather. The problem that we face when it comes to tornadoes, and you're going to kind of see this as I go through it, is that the numbers aren't the same. They're always off. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Because I was like, I'm so frustrated. Why are these like three different government-run institutions reporting different numbers as far as like tornadoes, tornado intensities, and things like that go? And it's because once a tornado passes into a different state, or it passes in, depending on where you're getting your information from, it can pass into a different state and it's a new record for that tornado. It's not a lifetime of the tornado, it's the occurrence of the tornado as it goes through a state or a county. So there are going to be differing numbers, but I tried to pick the best ones that I felt confident in giving you. If you want more information, I link everything in the show notes, and there's literally like dashboards, there's spreadsheets. Go look at them till your heart's desire is just met,
I'm not going to lie. I don't think it'll take long for my heart's desire to be met with that information.
Sure. To do this, I want to start by informing everyone, if they don't already know, that the U.S. has the most tornadoes and the most severe tornadoes in the world.
Yay, U.S.
Yay, the U.S. God is punishing us, and this is how. There's a pretty interesting reason for that. I'm sure many of you have heard of, like, Tornado Alley. It is a strip of the U.S. that sees a large concentration of tornadoes in it. The majority of them are there, we think, and I'll get to that. Originally, I thought that Tornado Alley encompassed Alabama, but it doesn't. The alley is actually a strip that runs north from Texas to South Dakota. So it's a strip that goes up like this. And when we're talking about tornadoes, they're either going to go from like southwest to northeast, or they're going to go from west to east directly. They don't move that way. And the reason for this is because there is a right there in the center of the United States, you've got warm air coming up from the Gulf. And then you've got the cold air coming in off of the mountain range that's right there above those that strip of states. So those two air fronts are meeting each other, and that's why they create all of those tornadoes. You also have the jet stream that comes in, and it pushes that air, and that's what causes tornadoes, essentially. But after I saw that Tornado Alley doesn't include Alabama or Mississippi, which a lot of tornadoes that end up in Alabama that are destructive actually start in Mississippi, I was confused. So I, you know, I pulled up a bunch of data and I was like, what is going on? And it just made me like even more confused, because a lot of these data sets are showing like the top 10 states that have like the most concentration of tornadoes in them. And almost always Texas is always going to be number one. Fine, whatever. But Alabama, Mississippi,
also, but
Tennessee,
if we're talking about a state, this is the biggest state in the nation, well, outside of Alaska, but like surface area alone, it's not surprising that it would have the most.
Well, and that's what was confusing me too, because I literally saying here, geographically, these southern states have more tornadoes. If we're talking about tornadoes per square miles, it has more tornadoes, but we're not. So, it is what it is. And furthermore, it makes no sense because the tornadoes that occur between like Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, that entire concentration of areas, the southeastern areas, they accumulate higher Fujita ratings than any other area. And they also cause the most destruction. And I was like, why are we not a part of Tornado Alley? So I was like, okay, per square mile, you know, all of this other stuff, whatever. The Tornado Alley is the perfect area for tornadoes to form. But the area, southeastern portion of the United States, is the most deadly area for tornadoes. And I'm not the only one who thought this, obviously. It wasn't just like, this, you know, dumb millennial bitch is like, oh, she has the first thought ever about tornadoes. But a man named Alan Pearsons, who was the director of the National Severe Storm Forecast Center in the late 60s through the 70s, decided to give the southeastern states its own alley name. And he so helpfully called it, of all things, Dixie Alley.
Of course.
God, as if we couldn't get away from that stigma. But
also, I will say, on that Tornado Alley, you said that was between Texas and South Dakota?
Yes.
It's also a lot less populated between that area compared to the Southeast, because the Southeast, yes, is very, very populated. It's very dense.
I'll cover it. It sparked a bunch of research after he did this. Like, this is not an actual name. Like, this is just somebody who was like...
I was about to say, did somebody rename that? Please say somebody did.
It doesn't have its own name. It hasn't been, like, solidified. There are actual papers that have been published on this, but they haven't, in the scientific community and the meteorology community, they haven't given it its own name.
And well, I doubt that the best one's already
will.
Taken.
Yeah.
They already named it the true. Other one.
I don't think that they ever will. Some of the stuff, if you look up like Tornado Alley online, a lot of the things that you're going to find are people like saying that Tornado Alley is shifting east, which it's not. It isn't. That's not happening. What is happening in Alabama and the surrounding states in that area, it's nothing new. It's not a shift. Yes, we're seeing more tornadoes over the years, but so is everybody else. And that's, you know, we're not going to get into climate change, but that is due to climate change and the fact that we are now able to monitor things better. So they're working in conjunction with each other. You've got global warming, which gives the perfect environment for tornadoes, and you have better tracking. It's not, I don't think it's Maven East. You can fight me on it all you want. I'm going to block you in our email. If you
I've been living here for a little while, and let me just tell you, it doesn't seem like I've had more tornado warnings than I did when I was younger. It seems all the same.
Mm-hmm. So the gist of all this research, because I'm not going to cite a whole bunch of papers to you, is that, yes, Tornado Alley has more tornadoes on average than the eastern area has. But the eastern area actually has longer running tornadoes. So from start to finish of a tornado's lifespan in that area, it lasts more than double the lifespan than it typically does in Tornado Alley. So it has a farther reach. They are also a higher enhanced Fujita scale tornado typically in the southeastern area as opposed to the Tornado Alley.
I realize what that measurement is. That's the whole F1, F2, F3, F4, F5, isn't it? Okay.
Yes. That's why my name on this recording is Fujita.
Yeah, I was waiting. I was going to give it some time and see if I put it together before I asked.
So as a whole, like those tornadoes in the southeastern area, they're causing more deaths, they're causing more damage and things like that. And it's not just because they are higher intensity tornadoes, which of course they will do more damage, of course, but even the smaller ones do more damage. And the reason that these tornadoes in this area, like you said earlier, Samantha, are creating more damage is because this area is a higher density population than what you would get across those states in Tornado Alley. But not only that, since it is such a dense population, the infrastructure of that area is built in a more urban way. So you're going to see a lot more like skyscrapers, a lot more building up instead of out and low, as in those other states where it's the plains and things like that. It's flat building. So you are going to get more damage. You are going to get more affected people because there's more affected people in those areas. There's also, and I didn't really like this paper because I didn't like the way they worded it, but there is another study that says more people in the area that we're talking about have more damage is because there's more mobile homes in those areas. Which, yes, is true because the wage discrepancy between these areas is also, and you have a higher concentration of the population there. So all that said, you know, it is actually, if you're thinking about moving near Tornado Alley, it's actually a pretty safe place from everything that I've seen. There isn't like a lot of deaths, though recently we've seen like an uptick in the intensity of tornadoes in that area and the frequency, but most people actually don't live in the affected areas within those states. They live right outside of it. So if you want to move there, move there. But
I feel like there's this, it's not necessarily stigma, but there's this mentality about tornadoes that they just pop out of nowhere and we have no warning and they kill everybody in sight. And that's just not true. I mean, it does happen like that sometimes. But a lot of the time, we know now how to look at the warning signs and how to, you know, get to a safe place. So that's another reason why people that live this on a yearly basis, we know what to look for. We know when to pay attention. And we have safe places to go to typically, where if it comes this way, we know where we need to go in order to be safe. So
yes.
That's the other side effect of the mobile home aspect. There's not really anywhere safe in a mobile home to be able to shelter. You have to have a tornado shelter basically dug into the ground in order to actually be safe. Whereas if you have a house where you don't have a basement and you don't have any part that's underground, you could still get into a tub and cover yourself with a mattress, or you can go to a closet that's in the center of the house and cover yourself with a mattress or blankets. You don't have that option with mobile homes. So that does make them more deadly because sometimes those people literally have nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing to think about.
The other issue too is this, you know, you can live in a mobile home and you can still get to safety within like the Alabama, Mississippi areas, because in those areas, along the roads, a lot of the times there are storm shelters within like 5 mile radiuses of especially rural areas, because they do live in mobile homes. So there is access to it. But another main reason why you see so much more injuries and deaths in the southeastern region as opposed to Tornado Alley is because in Tornado Alley, those tornadoes will pop up during the day. But when it comes to southeastern tornadoes, it is evening and it is middle of the night that they pop up. So a lot of people are asleep when they come through and they just sleep through it.
Is there a reason for that? Like why they pop up? I don't know if you're going to get to it. I'm so sorry I'm interrupting, but like, is there a reason they pop up during the nighttime in this area versus like the other areas?
I don't 100% know, but if I had to guess, it has to do with like the temperature rising and falling. So as the Gulf Stream has come, or as the Gulf air is coming up, it's constantly hot and humid in Alabama. Like you are just never going to get away from that. But as the temperatures cool down during the evening and that mountain air is finally being pushed into Alabama, not a lot of that air comes through. There's also a very concentrated time during the year that this comes through, and it's early spring.
Where the temperatures will, the difference between temperatures of daylight and nighttime are drastic. Like here, not too long ago, we had 80, 85 degree temps during the day. And at night, it would get down to the 50s. So that's a huge discrepancy just because the sun went down.
Yeah. And then if you have that jet stream coming in full force, it is going to help push and stir that air in just like the perfect tornado soup.
Perfect storm.
And so that's, you know, the evening. The farther down it would go, the hotter the temperature is going to be. So it needs to be a later time in the day where that adjustment to that temperature is going to be perfect to create a tornado. That's my assumption. You know, I'm just like a wannabe meteorologist. Kelsey knows what I'm talking about, but not a good one.
You just want to meet James Spann. That's all it is.
I do. I need to get my book signed.
Mm-hmm.
Tornadoes impact people in that area more too because of the timing that they show up. You know, it's just like the perfect storm scenario. I remember waking up in the middle of the night as a kid. We lived in a mobile home. And so my dad would come and wake us up and like towed us out to the car. And then we'd drive the block around to my grandparents' house, who had a brick home, had safety and all that stuff. And, you know, we would shelter there. And that was like a regular occurrence. I thought that was normal growing up. And then I moved to a state where there's like barely any tornadoes ever. And now anytime one comes in, I'm like PTSD over here. Like, we got to get the dogs in the crawl space. Like, please. It's a whole thing. On average, there are between 44 to 60-ish tornadoes in Alabama per year. I remember at one point I looked at a statistic a few years ago and it said around 260, but I now know that that was actually wrong because it was counting them multiple times that they hit different counties. So it is between like 44 and 60, different places record it differently. I'm going to lean more towards the 44 because of where I got that statistic and how often it showed up. With that information under our belt, I want to talk about the super outbreak. So between April 25th and April 28th, 2021, more than 200 tornadoes occurred. More than 200 tornadoes occurred in five of the southeastern states. The deadliest part of the outbreak was on April 27th, when a total of 122 tornadoes, some places said 177, 122 tornadoes resulted in 319 deaths. And I do also want to point out that depending on where your data is coming from and how they're including it, some places state it was more than 360 tornadoes between April 26th and April 28th, but that encompasses 10 more states because there were tornado outbreaks in like New York. You know, all of the eastern like states had tornadoes that day. But we know for certain that there were more than 200 in the five states that I'm talking about here. And that's Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, that whole thing. That little just nugget of countryness.
You say from your North Carolina seat. Some people would call that the Bible Belt.
Well, you know. And some people can kiss my ass.
Look, you can drive down the road and at any point in time pass five churches in like 10 minutes. So
I sure
that's
can.
Where that name came from.
62 of these tornadoes occurred on the 27th in Alabama. In one day, we almost doubled the amount of annual tornadoes we see in Alabama. And that's just Alabama. And that number is staggering to think about because up until that point, tornadoes had just been breaking out constantly in these areas. But as it got to the 27th, there were more popping up and the amount, whatever, I mean, that's devastating, whatever you say. But the EF ratings for these had begun to just skyrocket. We're not talking like EF1s, EF2s. We're talking consistent EF3s, EF4s, EF5s just dropping from the sky. And you can't predict, like, you know that it's coming because we all got warning. There were constant warnings during that time. We were in a state of tornado emergency, like, it was unprecedented during that time, but you couldn't predict where it was going to happen. And I think that was, I was too young and naive at the time to recognize the danger that I was in. It's me in that meme, the kid at the back of the bus chuckling, I'm in danger. That was me. I had no idea. And not just the EF ratings, they were lasting so long. Like the one I talked about that showed up in Birmingham, I'll get to it later, but it spanned over 80 miles. It ran for over 80 miles. It was so big, it was so devastating that there's literally a line from where it started in Mississippi through Tuscaloosa, through Birmingham, where you can look at a geographical map to this day and see the scar through that path where it just devastated everything. It's terrifying. So I want you to like remember that because you start getting into like how many tornadoes it was, what happened, and you're just like, oh, another tornado. Oh God, another fact. But it was terrifying.
And are you going to get to the point of explaining the difference between 1, 2, 3, and 4 and 5, because fives are actually quite rare. We actually don't see those a whole lot.
I am going to get to it. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration states that the Enhanced Fujita Scale, or the ES scale, which became operational on February 1st, 2007, is used to assign a tornado a rating based on estimated wind speeds and rated damage. When tornado-related damage is surveyed, it is compared to a list of damage indicators, DIs, and degrees of damage, DOD, which help estimate better the range of wind speeds and tornado likely produced. From that, a rating for EF0 to EF5 is assigned. And I know some people have said stuff about EF6. That is not an official scale because there's never been a recorded EF6 ever. The EF scale was revised from original. It used to be OF. It was original Fujita scale to reflect better examinations of tornado damage surveys. So as to assign wind speeds more closely with associated storm damage. And to this, I say, you need to revise it again. That's like all fine and good. You do want to measure damage. You want to measure like wind speed. But you also, in my opinion, as like a professional meteorologist, I feel that it also needs to take into account the size of the tornado. Because at the end of the day, the tornado that did that to the states of Mississippi and Alabama, that killed multiple people, that did billions of dollars of damage, it was rated an EF4. And there's a lot of debate on this. A lot of meteorologists are like, we think it's an EF5, while it's officially rated an EF4. And the reason I say you need to take in size is because at its peak size, that tornado spanned 1.5 miles wide. It was fucking massive. And that's why I said in my recounting, when you looked at it, you just thought it was a part of the sky. It was just so huge that you couldn't take into account like how big it actually was. So I really feel like they need to revise it. I don't know. I'm going to write a really strongly worded email to somebody. I don't know who that's going to be.
Let me know when you find out.
I will. Maybe I'll post it as like a bonus. So just like to give a technical information on like how this was created and how they had such advanced notice that it was going to be an issue. We did start hearing things late on the 24th and early on the 25th that we were about to have like a seismic issue as far as like storms were. They didn't know how bad it was going to be, but this is because there was a vigorous upper level trough that moved into the Southern Plains states, which is where Tornado Alley is, on April 25th, and an extra tropical cyclone developed ahead of it. So you had like these subtropical like winds spinning up into cold winds that were down here at such forces that they were like, oh shit, this isn't going to be good.
Official scientific quote.
That's meteorology for sure. Slang there, my friends. Let me just tell you. So I'm mostly going to cover the 27th, like the day of the 27th, but I'm going to do like some brief information about the days leading up to that. So it does start on the 25th. By the evening hours of April 25th, tornadoes had started being reported. By the evening hours of April 25th, tornadoes had been reported across a few states, some of which caused significant damage in Arkansas. An intense supercell thunderstorm tracked near the Little Rock area, and a tornado emergency was declared for the city of Vilonia. A large EF2 wedge tornado struck the town, subsequently causing severe damage and killing 4 people. A strong EF3 tornado had also struck the Hot Springs Village area near that evening. That tornado caused severe damage and resulted in 1 death. Later that evening, another EF2 tornado caused extensive damage to both a school building and Little Rock Air Force Base. Severe flooding continued across a large area from the Red River Valley to the Great Lakes. All in all, on the 25th in that area, we're still kind of like in the skirts of like the Tornado Alley area, a total of 42 tornadoes on the initial night were reported, and 5 tornado related deaths were confirmed. So this is just like getting off to a really good start. April 26th rolls around, and at this point there's like a high risk for severe weather, obviously, but they've been telling us that. And what they actually did at that time was they issued across several states, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, an extreme weather advisory. And like you get those during hurricanes, but you don't ever really get those during tornadoes. And they definitely don't consistently span them across states, but they did it this time. And they were really worried about it. A large tornado watch was just like blanketed across this area at that time because they knew there was going to be a high likelihood that tornadoes were going to occur. It wasn't like, oh, we're just going to watch out for it. No, it was, they're imminent. They're going to happen. It's a done deal, my friends.
Well, what's the difference? What does a watch mean versus a warning?
Yeah, a watch means you've got taco ingredients and you're watching to see if they assemble. A tornado warning means the taco is assembled. It's here, my friend. We're warning you, the taco is here. It is assembled.
That's definitely a way you could put it. Okay, cool.
That's a great meme. I saw that years ago. There were some low-level EF1s that spawned. Then a long-track wedge tornado caused EF2 damage in rural portions of Texas and Louisiana. After that, an EF3 tornado destroyed structures and caused severe damage at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, as well. A total of 55 tornadoes were confirmed on the 26th, but there were no fatalities that day. We're still in like the tornado alley area too, so you've got a better outcome for something like that. Oh, wedge tornado. So a wedge, I did want to like briefly talk about that too. There's different forms of tornadoes, and the wedge tornadoes typically end up being kind of the more severe ones because they have so much pressure in them as they go through. But depending on how wide they are, there's also like, column tornadoes?
Wedge tornadoes, water spouts, cones. Rope, stovepipe, land spout.
Wedge tornadoes are typically the ones that you're going to see. And they're going to be pretty devastating. The ones that we saw in Alabama on that day were multiple vortex tornadoes, which are not great. They're pretty bad, but there's different types of tornadoes.
Actually, that's exactly what you look like. You're going, oh, that doesn't look good.
I don't look good. Mm-mm. That was me like 3 weeks ago. I went outside when we were in a tornado warning and I looked at the sky. It was really calm. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, this is probably a tornado. And my husband was just like, it's not a tornado. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, okay. Bet. And he went outside. I was like, you need to come out here and look at this, because the front of the house looked, we were in the basement at this point, but you can see the front of the house. It was still bright outside. And I said, you need to come outside and you need to do a 180. And he did. And he goes, what the hell? It was just black. I'm like, that's what that is. We should probably go back inside, my friend.
Now that I've proven myself right, get back inside.
So the 27th rolls around. And I remember that there was tornado issues. And in fact, I think my dad called me that morning and was like, hey, you know, it's going to be like severe weather. I'm sure my grandfather called me. He's real weird about tornadoes. But I thought much about it. I was just like, I'm just going to work, you know, I'll just do whatever. I'm here. I've lived through tornadoes. It's fine. But during like the early morning hours, there were three waves that happened that day. And the first wave actually happened before my butt was even out of bed. It started around like 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was just like waves of these different tornadoes dropping in, but they weren't intense at that point. Some of them were, and a lot of them were coming from Mississippi, going into Alabama and then dissipating, just like, whoop, 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 you know, it wasn't hitting like much of anything. There was damage. There were issues. But at that point, I thought, eh, you know, whatever. So several of the morning tornadoes that were like low level tornadoes, they actually ended up creating what is called like a squall. It's a line where it just like, it's a line where it's easy for them to form. And during the morning, they spawned like lower level, like EFs. But there was one that formed it, and they were recorded like E1s. And then there were a couple of like E2s and then some E3s. And those are still devastating tornadoes, but you know, it is what it is. One place that was struck in particular that I want to make note of is Cordova, Alabama. It was struck that morning by an EF3 tornado, and it basically wrecked that city. It just went through and it said, fuck you, you're done. But we're not done with Cordova.
Yeah, Cordova was like 10, 15 miles north of where I was at home. So it was just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, it was everywhere. The most intense supercells of the outbreak developed around midday, and they started in Mississippi. And like I said, they tracked eastward into Alabama. With the extreme instability and wind shear, they quickly intensified and eventually became tornadic. Because at the beginning, it just kind of seems like it's forming. But it isn't until it reaches the ground that they're like, bam, there it is. That's a tornado. And that's what was happening. It was like picking up speed and momentum as it was going through Mississippi and entering into Alabama. Pretty much the cities in Alabama and Mississippi and those areas said, this is going to be bad. Like, this is going to be really bad. And they issued a widespread tornado event. And it was basically, wherever you're at, like, just stay there. We don't know when they're going to pop up, when they're going to show up. Like, this is just a blanket warning. And throughout like the afternoon hours, the tornadoes began to drop. And I'm not talking about like a drop in the bucket. It was a constant report of just tornadoes dropping down within like a handful of hours of time. And it wasn't E0s, E1s, E2s. It was consistently E3s, E4s, E5s over and over and over again. And you're just like, you're sitting there and you're like, oh, okay. God hates the South, I guess. I mean, I don't blame him, but okay. It kind of cleared up there for a minute. And I think that was like the brief time where we got that call and they were like, hey, go ahead and like pack stuff up. Because they could see the next front kind of like stirring up. But it was too late at that point. And by mid-afternoon, E4s and E5s began to touch down across Mississippi. So we're not even talking about E3s anymore. It's E4s and E5s. We're up here. We've made it to like the top tier.
It's escalating. As the day's going on, it's escalating.
One of the first E5s that touched down, it started in Neshoba County, Mississippi. It caused incredible damage northeast of Philadelphia, Mississippi. There was pavement ripped off of the roads. Vehicles were thrown. The ground was scoured out to a depth of 2 feet. 3 people died when a mobile home was thrown 300 yards into the wooded area near it, and it obliterated the entire mobile home. Another of those EF5 tornadoes struck the town of Smithville, Mississippi, where many well-built brick homes were reduced to bare slabs. Numerous hardwood trees were completely debarked, and an SUV was hurled half a mile into the top of the town's water tower, leaving a visible dent in it. Another long-track EF5 wedge tornado passed through rural portions of Alabama and Tennessee, becoming the deadliest tornado of the outbreak as it completely devastated the town of Hackleburg, Phil Campbell, Mount Hope, Tanner, and Harvest, killing 72 people. This marks only the second day in history after April 3rd, 1974, that there were more than two EF5s reported. And we're not done. You remember Cordova? It was struck by an EF3 earlier in the day. Well, by that afternoon, it was struck again by an EF4 that killed 13 people during this pass.
Yeah, I feel like I remember that because it was just around the time where people were starting to get out and try to see what was going on with the damage, make sure people were okay, and then they got hit again while people mm-hmm. were out.
There were several other EF4s and EF4 outbreaks during this time. But outside of the EF5s that I've already mentioned, there was only one other EF5 that was reported that day. But I do want to go back and focus on the Tuscaloosa-Birmingham one, because that is the most talked about one that day. And it did do just so much damage. And historically, it is probably one of the most fascinating tornadoes, just in how big it got, and then how small it got, and then how big it got again as it went into these urban areas. So in several places, I did find that there is kind of a, this is what I was talking about earlier. There's a squabble about the EF rating for this tornado. A lot of people do believe to this day it needs to be an EF5. And I agree. I agree. The amount of damage it doled out, not cool, bro. The supercell that was this tornado produced a large wedge tornado in rural Greene County, Alabama. It originally developed in Mississippi, but as it made its way into Alabama, that's when the supercell was produced. And it tracked towards the adjacent Tuscaloosa County. So if you're looking at a map of Alabama, Tuscaloosa is like down here, west, southwest of Birmingham. And the place that we're looking at in Mississippi, same thing. So it's got a clear path up northeast through Alabama towards Tennessee. So by the time it made it near Tuscaloosa, it was an EF2 intensity. And it had begun to like uproot numerous trees, and it was causing, you know, minor structural damage near Union at 450. And there is footage of this if you ever want to go and look at it. I highly recommend looking at it in Tuscaloosa, and there's also footage when it gets to Birmingham. It is terrifying. I can say that. But once the footage was out on the National Weather Service office in Birmingham, they issued a state of emergency in Birmingham. And they were like, thought you were going home, huh? You're not. It intensified as it made its way southeast through Tuscaloosa. The tornado entered the southern portion of Tuscaloosa as a low-end EF4. And it crossed 34th Street. It completely destroyed a cell tower, several warehouses. It passed within a half a mile of the Tuscaloosa Police Department headquarters. At the same time, the Tuscaloosa County Emergency Management Office sustained a direct hit and was totally destroyed along with most of their equipment and vehicles, but with no injuries to the staff. The tornado then ripped through the neighborhoods of Rosedale and Forest Lake, leveling and sweeping away numerous poorly anchored homes. These are mobile homes. several apartment complexes were entirely destroyed in this area. A few two-story apartment buildings were completely reduced to rubble. The tornado crossed the intersection of 15th Street and McFarland Boulevard, and numerous businesses and restaurants near the University Mall were completely flattened at low-end EF4 strength. Vehicles were tossed and destroyed, and multiple other neighborhoods throughout here were just flattened. And like I said, if you ever pull up a map, like a geographical map of that time, you can look at it after that day or in 2011, and you can see the clear line through Mississippi, through Alabama, of what that tornado did. And you can still see the scar of that to this day, if you know what to look for. So it goes on through, it destroys several other buildings, multiple other apartment complexes. It kills a bunch of people, like, not gonna lie. But when you look at these apartment complexes, there are people who were in them, and there is nothing there anymore. It is just gone. Once it gets out of Tuscaloosa, it begins to, like, fade. So it goes down to an EF2 once it leaves Tuscaloosa, but it's still causing damage as it's going. And it goes from being a mile wide back down to a half a mile wide as it leaves, but it is still causing damage as it goes. And once it left Tuscaloosa, so in Tuscaloosa, there were 44 people killed there in that instance. And it travels along and it makes its way towards Birmingham. This is over 20 miles away. So you've got Tuscaloosa, it's decimated it. 20 miles away, you're in Birmingham. People afterwards were finding things that were picked up in Tuscaloosa in Birmingham. It had carried that debris 20 miles into Birmingham. This is how bad that tornado was. So after it caused all of this damage and it enters into Jefferson County, it begins to rapidly intensify again. And it intensifies to its maximum intensity throughout this as it hits Birmingham. The width at this point is 1.5 miles wide. And it's now, when it was in Tuscaloosa, it was a low-end EF4. Once it hits Birmingham, it is a high-end EF4 or an EF5 if you're a wannabe meteorologist or even an actual meteorologist that believes that. It rips through portions of Birmingham at this point, but there's a list of things that it just destroys. I'm not going to go into it. It does rip up a lot of foundational stuff. It, as Samantha says, there were banks that were flattened and the only thing that was left were the vaults. There were cars that were completely moved. And at that point, there's so much stuff that's a bit taller and it's going over multiple interstates. It is just causing destruction. So it exits the Birmingham metro area and it makes its way towards Fultondale, where it continues to do damage to homes and businesses in town. At this point, it has started to be less intensive. It starts to rapidly weaken at this point, and it gets smaller. So as it hit its peak in Birmingham, it was 1.5 miles wide. But as it starts heading into Fultondale, it has become significantly smaller. And it is now down to an EF1. As it made its way through Birmingham, 20 people were killed. The National Weather Service determined the path length of this violent tornado to be, like I said previously, 80.68 miles. with a maximum damage path of 1.5 miles. It caused approximately $2.4 billion of property damage, surpassing the 1999 Bridge Creek Moore tornado as the costliest single tornado in United States history. And that was just one of the 360 tornadoes that occurred within that time period. $2.4 billion in damages. And you had 319 deaths over the course of the entirety of that. But that wasn't just that one tornado. That was all in all. So yeah, that was the Tuscaloosa-Birmingham tornado. And that was just one of over 300. So that's it. I'm done talking. Y'all talk.
I mean, it's hard to, even being from Alabama, it's hard to imagine that much devastation over such a short period of time. It's just, there's places I think that still haven't recovered from that, to be perfectly honest. Not even just the damages, but just the loss of life, the loss of the businesses, the loss of people. Like, it's just hard to fathom, honestly. And you said, it lost intensity, but just to kind of put it in perspective, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this was the same storm system. I had a friend that lived in apartments in Fultondale, and by the time that tornado got there, it did enough damage to her apartment building that they had to condemn it and kick every resident out of it and rebuild it. So even at the lower level, it was still doing plenty of damage to decimate, businesses, buildings. And Fultondale is what, 10, maybe 10 miles north of Birmingham?
Yeah, most.
So, it's not that far away, but it's not that close either. So even with it decreasing, it still did plenty of damage. So
yeah,
being that much bigger and that much more powerful is just insane.
There's plenty of videos of all of the tornadoes that were recorded that day, but especially this one, because since it went through Tuscaloosa and it went through Birmingham, it's not just like random people in the early 20-aughts recording on their cheap ass cell phones. It is news stations that have weather cameras on the top of their buildings in these locations that are recording this. So it's actually decent quality. You can see exactly, the width and the breadth and the gravity of these tornadoes as they make their way through. And Tuscaloosa, that's the University of Alabama. Of course, they're going to keep eyes on that.
Yeah, and this was April. So, there were still people in those dorms and in that student housing, because
there were
that semester wasn't over yet. So that was still heavily populated at that point, too.
Yeah,
I did want to mention, though, because I asked you about the difference in the EF levels, and you kind of went over what it was, but you didn't actually specify what the difference is between the levels. Like,
what the rating is, what the scale is, I guess.
Yeah, so I looked it up because I couldn't remember because I knew it was a good bit different. But if you're talking miles per hour, EF4 is anywhere from 166 miles per hour to 200, and anything over 200 is considered an EF5.
Yeah.
So that's considered violent, which I feel like is a little bit of an understatement, but sure, we'll go with that. And an EF3 is considered strong at 136 miles per hour to 165. Again, I feel like this is an understatement, but I guess they couldn't find better wording for that. But okay, I'll take it.
It's frustrating too, because they can't accurately measure the wind speeds at its peak. So they're measuring wind speeds based off of damage reports a lot of the time. So I still don't feel like EF is a proper, a whole encompassing measurement for tornadoes. I mean, we're, you know, it's closer. It's good. It's just not good enough if you're going to do things like this. Because you also, you don't know what that might impact as far as like insurance claims. You know, is it going to be different based on like different categories and things like that? Is it an act of God or is it a, you know, who knows? It could be different. And I'm not saying that it is. I'm just like, I got beef with the Weather Association.
As technology improves and as the statistics and measurements all improve, as you, I would hope that they would, you know, that might get better. Especially since this is since what you said, 2007. So, I mean, that's a long time. That's 17 years of not updating a scale that we have to have better measurements and better technology since then. So I would expect that to change or at least be more accurate at some point.
One would hope.
You would hope.
Anyways, we've made this really long. We're not going to give you safety tips on that on here, but what I will do is make a TikTok video that we will release on our social medias about the best safety precautions for tornadoes and release that to you guys. You can save that for later. Put it in your back pocket. If you don't have any social media, just email us and we'll just, I don't know, send it to you.
Sure. Just why look not? It up on Google.
That's true. You have Google. If you're emailing me, you have access to the internet. Just look up safety precautions. That's all.
There you go.
Anyways, but rule of thumb, just to end it quickly. If the wind starts to pick up outside after it's been calm and you know there's a tornado warning, get your ass inside. That's it. Get to safety immediately because a tornado is not around the corner. A tornado is right there. That's it. You're done so, friend.
And get a weather radio that puts off an alarm at night and wakes you up.
Good job, me. And
good job, Montana. Good job, Kelsey. She didn't fall asleep.
Until next time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The Reaper will come for us all.
Side note, you can cut this, Kelsey, if you want. It gets too long. But there is a man, a meteorologist I grew up with in Alabama. Everybody grew up with him. His name is James Spann.
Everyone knows him.
He wears suspenders. And as the weather gets worse in an area, more portions of his clothes begin to fall off. He's not
that
a handsome. I mean, he's
that is not what actually happens.
His clothing gets like more disarrayed. And so you see like more, you start to see the suspenders. Then his tie comes loose. And then he's like on a stool.
And then
and
he's rolling
like,
up his
sleeves.
He's rolling up his sleeves.
Yeah, he's rolling up his sleeves.
Well, I mean, it's because he's literally on the TV the entire time. And so you're talking sometimes 6, 7, 8 hours if it's a really bad outbreak. So, yeah, I mean, the jacket comes off and then the suspenders and then the tie and then he rolls up his sleeves.
I was not going to bring up James Spann. And I'm really glad that you did because, like, I was obsessed with James Spann in my 20s. Obsessed. I stalked him on social media. I stalked him in every aspect that I possibly could. He also had a show on the radio called Weather Weenies, and it was him teaching children about the weather, and I listened to it religiously. So, yes, I am obsessed with a meteorologist.
I will have to send you one of those memes that they did of him where it's like it gives you the different levels of warning in the state of Alabama based on what James Spann is wearing. And at one point he doesn't have a shirt on and it's like,
yeah,
just kiss your ass goodbye, basically.
Pretty much.
I'll have to send it to you.
So that's like a whole like Alabama cultural like thing. It's pretty interesting.
God bless him.
But if you watch Good Morning America and the weather person who's on it, I think her name is Ginger. She's like nationally known. She actually worked with James Spann and studied under him before she went to Good Morning America. So that was fun. They are friends. Of course I followed all of that.
Of course.
Because I'm a stalker. Where was I at?
I have no idea.
I was basically, I was saying, you know,